With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you wish to ask. And then she can either type a response or use their voice-to-text feature, and MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy. It's something that you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. And this is something that Ethan and I had been thinking about doing with our parents. We have this podcasting equipment, so we wanted to find a way for them to tell their story. But I love this because it's so regimented. They send them a question every week, and it just makes it really easy and turnkey. And it just seems like a great way for us to get our parents' stories down so that our children and our children's children can have them. So if you're interested, check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code ATTWG at checkout for 15% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use code ATTWG for 15% off today. We sleep better when we sleep cool. As the weather is getting warmer, staying cool while we sleep will be top of mind. Organic and natural bedding sleeps cooler than cheaper synthetic alternatives, and they last longer too. A fresh season calls for a fresh start, and that includes your bed. From seriously soft organic cotton sheets to breathable silk and luxurious down duvets, Avocado Green's bedding makes it easy to reset your space sustainably. Perfect for hot sleepers in warmer months, Avocado Green sheets and duvet inserts are naturally breathable and help regulate temperature, so you sleep cool, dry, and comfortable all night long. Avocado bedding is thoughtfully designed and expertly crafted for lasting durability. From reinforced stitching to premium long staple organic fibers, every detail is made to stand the test of time, wash after wash, season after season. We sleep better when we sleep cool, so head to avocadomattress.com today to save 10% on all bedding and 50% on clearance bedding. Avocado, dream of better. Remember when I talked about True Diagnostics True Age Test? Well, I took it myself and the results blew my mind. I was very wrong. If you remember, I was worried about my brain and not my cardiovascular health. And it turns out my brain's fine, but my cardiovascular health needs work. But luckily, my biological age was really right on track with my actual age, which is good because research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. That's a big deal, and it's completely avoidable. The good news is nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hands. It's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and the environment you're in, which means that you have a lot of control over it. The True Age test didn't just give me a number. It showed how quickly my heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging, and it was eye-opening. And I will say, I definitely picked up the workouts after I learned that my cardiovascular health isn't as good as I thought it was. The test itself was super easy and convenient. I did it from home, and it was just a quick, painless finger prick that I made Ethan do because I was too scared. You send it off in a tiny sample in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get a detailed online report about your aging and health. So if you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code ATTWG to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use ATTWG at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
An 18-year-old student is back home on a break from school. Deirdre Jacob had left her Irish town to work as a student teacher in the UK. On July 28, 1998, Deidre was getting ready to return to her job. She was running errands and visiting family. She was alone, but it was the middle of an afternoon in the town she grew up in. But Deidre never made it back to her parents' home. Though she was last seen only about 350 feet away from their front door, her whereabouts have remained a mystery for over 20 years. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. I want to tell you the story of Deidre Jacob. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. You know, we're a little late this week, but like we've got stuff. It's fine. Everything's fine. I'm very excited this week, though, to tell our second overseas story.
Oh, yeah.
So our first one was the Australian case of Eloise Whirlage.
Right.
And this one is out of Ireland.
Exciting.
Yeah. So, like, all of our cases, it's so weird, you know? Like, I just, that's, I guess, why they go unsolved and why, you know, people cover them, because they're so disturbing. For this one, so many people saw Deidre the day she went missing, literally minutes before she went missing. But it's been 23 years, and the case still hasn't officially been solved. All right, so let's dig in. Let's just get right to it. Deidre Jacob was born on October 14th, 1979, to Michael and Bernadette Jacob. She grew up in Newbridge, County Kildare, Ireland. Deidre lived in Newbridge her entire life and had a younger sister, Ciara, who was about 4 years younger than she was. Newbridge is a pretty small town where everyone kind of knows everyone. It seems absolutely lovely to us, you know.
As is every Irish town.
Yeah, that you guys should watch.
Desperately want to go.
Yes, you should see Ethan anytime we watch any show set in like Ireland or England. He's just like, oh, I want to move there. Can we move there? Let's go there.
It just looks awesome.
Yeah, but Deidre was a teenager. She's basically our same age. She was like a year older than we were. So we were growing up at the same time. And like any other teenager, she kind of thought her town sucked and wanted to move someplace cooler.
Don't destroy the image of Ireland to me.
I know.
I understand that it's, you know, just another town in, or just another country in a part of the world.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's the same problems that exist everywhere else. But in my mind, it's this peaceful little place
with
lush green hills, and we should just go and retire there.
Yes, we should. But yeah, so Deidre, though, you know, like many teenagers, had dreams of something bigger. When she graduated high school, or secondary school, as it's called there, she decided she wanted to study to become a teacher. But she didn't want to stay super close to home in order to do that. She wanted to move to the big city. So Deidre enrolled at St. Mary's University in London.
Ooh.
Yeah. Even though Deidre wanted to experience the freedom and independence that living in a big city allows, she still traveled back to Newbridge quite frequently and even worked in a school back there in order to gain more experience. And so, like, just like real quick, so she was described in a lot of articles as a student teacher. I feel like the Irish, like the European education system, is so much more. It's just, it's a lot different from ours, and I feel like they like expect a lot more from people than we do, because she was 18. So at 18, we'd be like, if you could just wake up at some point and then go to a class ever, that would be great. But like, she was 18 and was fully a student teacher and was working at another school at home and just like doing everything.
She's 18. That means she's like fresh out of high school.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this was her first year.
I could not imagine, you know, a freshman in college in the U.S. doing something like that.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, yeah. I just feel like they grow up faster and they just live their lives a little bit better and quicker than we do.
This is why we gotta go.
Yeah. So when her first year of classes ended, she returned to her parents' home. Like, you know, again, that's a very common thing here too. You know, you finish your freshman year, summer comes, you go back home to your parents. So that's what Deirdre did. She went back to Newbridge and she went to her parents' home and lived there for the summer. In all of the articles I read, I couldn't find much information on how Deirdre spent that summer in Newbridge, but I mean, it sounds like it was just pretty low key. She hung out with her family, and the weekend before she went missing, she actually spent that weekend in Carrickmacross hanging out with some friends from college.
Where was that again?
Carrickmacross.
One more time.
Nope, absolutely not.
I'm not sure everybody heard
nope,
you.
Nope. Hard pass. Yeah, so she was there with some friends from college the weekend before. So, you know, like, this is July, the end of July. So summer's winding down, but you've, you know, still got a couple more weeks to hang out. But it sounds like Deirdre was kind of getting into fall semester mode. Because on July 28th, which was a Tuesday, Deirdre wasn't doing anything terribly exciting. She walked into town basically to go run some errands. The walk from her family's home to the center of Newbridge took her about 25 minutes. And this was a journey that she had been making without incident for her entire life, like since she was a child, you know, because she lived in a small town in Ireland in the 80s and 90s. And like, you could just do that. You could just go walk into town. So she'd been doing that for a very long time.
Yep, because it's like the land of fairies and hobbits. That's why, because it's magical. We should move there.
Yes. So that day, she was getting ready for the start of the new school year. She had found a place to live in London, but had to pay the deposit. Now, today, obviously, that would be done in about 2 minutes. She'd go online, there'd be a portal, she would pay the deposit, bing, bang, boom, done. But this is 1998, so she had to go to a physical bank, and it says she took a bank draft, which, you know, I don't know. It sounds just like she got like...
Probably withdrew money.
Well, yeah, I don't think she got cash, though. I think she probably got like a cashier's check because...
Okay.
She then went to the post office to mail it to a friend to, you know, pay the deposit. So I think she was mailing it to a friend who she was supposed to be roommates with.
Ah, okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And then the friend, like, paid the deposit. So it sounds like, you know, bank, cashier's check, post office, deposit.
Sure, sure.
So she had to physically put it in the mail, like, with a stamp and an envelope and everything. Her grandmother actually owned a shop in town. So while she was out and about, Deirdre stopped by and said hi to her. So we have a pretty detailed account of her whereabouts that afternoon, partially because many people who knew her saw her. Mm-hmm. And also partially because we have a surprising amount of surveillance footage for a small town in 1998.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like actually good quality. Like, I've seen some of the footage online and we'll post it on the blog, and I've seen some of the stills, and you're like, you can actually tell it's her. So that's crazy because, like, so often in these cases, they're in a place where there should be surveillance footage.
Yeah, there never
is. But the cameras are broken.
Yeah, or the footage is so grainy you can't see anything.
Exactly. But for whatever reason, in Newbridge, County Kildare, Ireland, in 1998, there was like really good surveillance footage.
Maybe they had like a really nice Radio Shack in town.
Maybe. I have no idea. But yeah, it's really impressive. Like, you can actually just see her. And the last known image of Deirdre is her waiting in line at the post office at 2:26 p.m. So after she went to the post office, mailed the check, did her business, she started the walk back home. There were a couple of different routes she could have taken, because again, it was a 25-minute walk, which to me is close to 2 miles, maybe about a mile and a half, give or take. And there were apparently several ways she could have gone. But from what I've read, it sounds like regardless, like there were several ways she could have gone until she got to like this one street. And either way, she had to end up on that street. And several people saw her on that street. So her exact route doesn't really matter. Because so
you said people saw her on at the choke point of these several routes.
Yes.
Okay. So that was after 2:28 when she was seen on those surveillance.
Yes.
Okay.
So yeah. So her like entire point A to point B route doesn't really matter.
Right.
It's more of the like point A, point 5 to point B route, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When she was on that last street, she was seen by 8 different people. 6 of whom knew her.
Okay, so it wasn't a case of mistaken identity.
No. I mean, unless it was like some mass psychosis in the town or something. Like, a lot of people saw her. And that's what really struck me about this case. She was seen by so many people. A man on a bike, a man fixing his roof, like people who were also out walking and said hello to her. Nearly every step she took was accounted for. In fact, the last person to report seeing the teenager said that he saw her at the gate to her home.
Do we have a rough estimate of time?
Yeah, it's right around 3 p.m. So again, the timeline completely matches up.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think this person actually knew Deirdre, but he remembered the bag she was wearing. It was a black messenger bag, because we loved a messenger bag in the 90s.
Very true.
And it had a bright yellow cat logo, meaning Caterpillar, like the bulldozer company.
Oh, okay.
Yes, because we also loved being ironic farmers in the 90s. I don't know if that reached up to Pittsburgh.
Definitely did not reach Pittsburgh. No.
Because like here, I remember a lot of people... Like, I don't remember anybody having that specific messenger bag, but I do remember things with, like, the cat logo on it as, like, a fashion accessory.
Was it ironic because you were in the middle of farmland?
I mean, kind of, but also, yeah, because also around here, people would wear, like, Carhartt pants and, like, jackets and stuff.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
That wasn't...
Well, so Carhartt pants down here was a big thing with the skaters. Because they were really big and baggy. And so like a lot of the skaters down here would wear them.
Yeah. I mean, we were wearing Jenkos.
Well, so were we. Like that was a thing too.
Yeah.
But like here it was kind of both. Huh. It was a lot.
I mean, we did. We
contained multitudes.
We had carpenter pants. We wore carpenter pants.
Yeah, but and Carhartts are like for real, legit carpenter pants.
Yeah.
So we were, I guess, a little more authentic than you were.
Maybe you guys had a little bit more money than we did.
I don't know about all that. But in any case, so it was a very memorable bag because it's not like everybody had one of these, you know? Mm-hmm. It was a trend, but it wasn't ubiquitous.
The bag was not as trendy.
No, absolutely not. And it was still a black bag with a bright yellow logo, and that's noticeable.
Yeah.
Deirdre basically made it to her house. She was just steps away from her driveway when she seemingly vanished into thin air. Because Deirdre was 18 and home for the summer, no one in her family realized she was missing right away. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't until that evening around 7 p.m. when she still wasn't home that her parents thought something might be wrong and called the Gardaí. Police seemed to take the disappearance pretty seriously, despite the fact that Deirdre was technically an adult. They got right to work looking for her. And when she still hadn't been found by July 31st, a nationwide appeal was made for information leading to her location and return. So keep in mind, she went missing on July 28th. By August 2nd, the Gardaí were searching local bogs, fields, and riverbanks, but found no sign of the young woman. Ireland's relatively like a pretty small country, so they don't have a ton of missing people. So Deirdre's case got a lot of media attention.
I'm assuming that the police looked into her parents.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly couldn't find any articles that explicitly said that.
Yeah, but, or I mean, gave the parents' location.
Yeah, oddly enough, none of the articles I read like went into that at all.
Different reporting over there.
I think so. I think that's really more what it is. Then like they didn't look at the parents because a parent could never do that. I'm
sure the police looked into it, but
yeah.
The media outlets over there probably didn't investigate that or didn't think that was relevant.
I don't know.
Maybe,
so
maybe the news media over there actually respects the privacy of individuals. I don't know.
In any case, I didn't read anything about them looking into any members of the family or treating this like a non-stranger abduction at all.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But the media, they got really interested, and it quickly turned into a frenzy when media began to speculate that Deirdre's disappearance may not have been an isolated incident.
Oh.
They were asking, could she be a victim of Ireland's vanishing triangle? Ireland's Vanishing Triangle refers to a group of Irish women who all disappeared in the mid to late 90s. Most of the women, there are 8 in all, were in their late teens to early 20s. And they all went missing suddenly from the eastern side of the country.
Huh. I've never heard about this.
Yeah, I hadn't heard about it either until I started researching this case. But these women, Annie McCarrick, Fiona Pender, Ciara Breen, Jojo Dullard, Fiona Sinnott, Ava Brennan, Imelda Keenan, and Deirdre have never been seen again.
Hmm.
While the circumstances of several of these disappearances are similar, the common thought is that not all of them were necessarily perpetrated by the same person. Though police do believe that at least some of the cases are connected. Like, nobody thinks that 8 different men came and attacked and abducted / murdered 8 different women.
Sure.
On the eastern side of Ireland.
Yeah.
For instance, Fiona Sinnott was the 19-year-old woman who disappeared in February of 1998, just a few months before Deirdre. She was last seen leaving a pub with her ex-boyfriend, who is also the father of her 11-month-old daughter. He claims that he slept on the couch at her home that night, and she left the next morning to go to the doctor because she was having like arm pain or something. But she was never seen again. And police, when they got involved, could never locate any evidence that she ever went to the doctor or did anything of the sort. And when Gardaí examined her home, they found that it had been stripped of many of her personal belongings. A nearby farmer later found trash bags with many of those belongings belonging to Fiona, but she was never seen again. In that case, the ex-boyfriend is the primary suspect, and it seems to be a domestic incident, ultimately unrelated to the other cases. But, I mean, without a body, the truth of what happened to Fiona has been difficult to prove.
Right.
So, you know, like all of these other cases, it's still unsolved. Mm-hmm. She still hasn't been found, and nobody has been arrested. But Jojo Dullard is a different story. Jojo was a 21-year-old woman who was living in Dublin. She was from nearby Killan, which is in County Kilkenny. She had recently dropped out of school and was planning on moving back home to kind of, you know, regroup and figure out her life a little bit. When she missed her bus to go home, she ended up taking a different one part way and then hitchhiked from there. At 11:37 p.m. on November 9th, 1995, she made a call at a payphone to her friend Mary Cullinan. She ended the call when a car came up to her and stopped. It was presumed that the person inside offered her a ride because she had been hitchhiking, but she was never seen again. At the time, JoJo was considered to be the last victim in the Vanishing Triangle, but when Deirdre went missing, that came into question because the place where JoJo made that last call, it was in a village called Moon in County Kildare, only about 30 miles from where Deirdre would disappear less than 3 years later. So the search for Deirdre continued, but no one could understand what had happened to the woman who seemingly vanished into thin air right in front of her house in the middle of the day. Had someone followed her? Was someone waiting there for her? Did someone in a car come up and abduct her? Like, anything really seemed possible. But there were no clues that led police one way or the other. They interviewed the whole town, basically, and while many people saw Deirdre that day, no one noticed anything odd. And as far as I know, like, there's no shady ex-boyfriend or anyone else who Deirdre had been having problems with. She was seemingly a completely average 18-year-old living a completely average life. Police renewed their appeal for information on September 7th as investigative avenues began to be exhausted. Deirdre's mother, Bernadette, pleaded for people to come forward if they had seen her daughter. And on September 28th, someone did. A man called into a radio station and said that not only had he seen Deirdre that day, but he had given her a ride.
Oh.
He said that he picked her up a few miles from her home and that she seemed agitated. He then drove her 3 hours away to Carrickmacross in County Monaghan. Now, if the name Carrickmacross sounds familiar, it's because I mentioned it earlier in the episode. That's where Deirdre was the weekend before she disappeared. So given that, her parents thought this tip may be just what they had been waiting for.
Sure.
But I find it interesting that so many people saw Deirdre, and this person claimed to see to have picked her up like several miles past her house.
Right.
But nobody else says that they saw her go past her house at all.
Yeah, and he claims that she was irritated or agitated.
Agitated, yeah.
By what?
Yeah, well, who knows?
Yeah, I'm just thinking, like, are we assuming that her parents were in the house?
No, I don't think they were home.
Okay. So maybe she did make it into the house and maybe got a phone call?
I mean, I don't know. I would have assumed they would have checked all the phone records, you know, and nothing about a phone call was ever said. I mean, there could have been, like, maybe her parents weren't home, but she did have a 14-year-old sister. So she could have been home, you know, but there's never been anything that indicated she ever made it past the driveway of their house.
Yeah, and 98, unlikely that she had a cell phone.
It could be possible. Yeah, it does not sound like she had a cell phone.
I'm just wondering, like, okay, if she made it to her house to, or to the gate to her house, you know, what would cause her to get agitated and leave?
Well, right, because again, a million people saw her and she was like doing very boring things.
Right.
She was going to the bank, she was going to the post office. Yeah, I don't think she had a cell phone. So what could have happened that would have caused her to walk several miles past her house and then hitch a ride with a stranger? But, you know, regardless, because he did mention Kirkman Cross, where Deidre had actually been, her parents were like, well, this sounds like it could be something. So they begged the anonymous caller to come forward and give them more information, but he didn't. Instead, he made many other calls to GuardEye, to newspapers. He even wrote Bernadette and Michael a 4-page letter. For months, GuardEye investigated, and the Jacob family made pleas for this man to come forward. They traveled up to the Kirkman Cross area and posted flyers everywhere, you know, hoping that maybe somebody had seen her if she had been driven there. You know, they were just hoping for new witnesses or new clues or just something. But months passed and the man still wouldn't identify himself.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I'm getting the feeling that this is a mental health consumer who's inserting himself into an investigation for not necessarily notoriety, mm-hmm. but because there's some sort of mental disorder that's leading him to do this. We talked about this before.
Right.
This is a common thing in widely publicized, well-known cases that you get these calls from people that have nothing to do with it, you know, and they just want to stir the pot for mm-hmm. whatever reason. And the police have to investigate them, obviously.
Well, yeah, especially because, like I said, I mean, he said things that sure. seemed legit.
Sure, but we also don't know the level of reporting. Perhaps he saw, maybe there was a news report somewhere about her, the timeline of what she was doing
yeah.
the weekend before, and he picked up on that clue about Kirkman Cross and included that to make it seem as though he was legit.
Yeah, I actually don't know the answer to that piece of it. He contacted the family in September. Some reports I read said that he even contacted GuardEye 10 days after Deidre's disappearance. Mm. It was just not until the end of September that he made this call to the radio station. So he had been doing this for a while, and by January of the next year, of 1999, like, he was still doing this. Like, he was still making calls. He was still sending letters and not saying who he was or giving any more information.
That's a problem for me. I mean, like, so that if this was somebody that legitimately interacted or had this interaction with mm-hmm. her, and he's so persistent about it, why is he failing to come forward?
Right. And you know? I think after several months, that's what GuardEye were wondering too. So they're like, you know what? If you're not going to come forward, like, we're just going to figure this out. So they decided to play one of the man's calls, which they had recorded, on RTE's Midday News. Within minutes, he was identified. And like you said, it was determined that it was all a hoax.
There you go.
Yeah, he had recently suffered his own personal tragedy, and for whatever reason, that led him to want to insert himself into this tragedy.
Yeah.
I know that we're coming to expect it, but I still find it shocking how often something like this happens in these cases.
It's disturbing. I mean, it's disturbing and upsetting to the investigators also. Even though those of us in law enforcement are familiar with it, if you're investigating something like this, like, you still have a somewhat of a personal stake.
Well, of course.
And getting misled by this, you know, for no seeming reason, like, it pisses you off.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it was, and the parents too were devastated.
I'm sure,
you
yeah.
know, because they thought that they had an avenue to getting answers, and it turned out that they didn't. And they were right back where they started, which was basically nowhere.
Yeah.
So this obviously brought the perceived momentum in Deidre's case to a screeching halt. But after this, there was a new appeal for information, but this one wasn't from police. Remember, we're in Ireland. So it was from the church.
Mm.
priests around the country urged their members to come to them if they had any information on the missing woman, if they didn't feel comfortable going to police.
All right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know how, like, helpful that ultimately would have been, because I don't know.
I mean, that kind of testimony wouldn't stand up in court here. I don't know the proceedings over there, but.
But in any case, it didn't seem like it created any new movement in the case. But like I said, this case really did get a lot of attention. And again, there were just pleas for new information constantly from many different avenues. Like the other woman in Ireland's vanishing triangle, Deirdre's case ultimately went cold, even as the reward for information climbed to £100,000.
Wow.
Throughout the years, Michael and Bernadette stayed in the public eye, periodically making fresh appeals for someone, anyone, to come forward with information in their daughter's case. While there were rumors flying around and definitely things happening behind the scenes in the investigation, no real news would come out about Deirdre until 2018, the 20th anniversary of her disappearance. That year, Gardaí upgraded Deirdre's case from a missing persons case to a murder. And this was primarily based on an alleged confession. According to an article in the Irish Times, quote, "The new information has satisfied the Garda beyond doubt that Miss Jacob was murdered rather than, for example, being killed accidentally and her remains disposed of," end quote. They also named a person of interest, Larry Murphy. Larry Murphy was a name that had been bandied about in relation to the Vanishing Triangle for several years by that point. Murphy was a contractor who lived in Baltinglass in County Wicklow, which is within the area of the Triangle.
Okay.
In 2001, Murphy was convicted of abducting, repeatedly raping, and attempting to murder a woman in the Wicklow Mountains in 2000. He was interrupted during the crime by a pair of hunters and was later apprehended, which is the only reason the woman survived. He ended up serving 10 years of a 15-year sentence and was released in 2010.
Remind me again, time frame of the triangle when these women went missing.
Yeah, so the very first woman went missing in 1993.
Okay.
And Deirdre went missing in 1998.
Right.
Larry Murphy committed this crime in 2000.
Okay.
And then went to prison in 2001.
Okay. But
and then got out in 2010.
Presumably, it stopped when he went to prison. There were no other missing persons associated with this triangle.
Yeah, no. Deirdre is still considered to be the last victim.
Okay.
There was one other woman who was mentioned as a possible victim after Deirdre.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say in like 2012, but it was determined that she was murdered. Like they found who killed her. I think it was her husband or boyfriend or something like that.
Okay.
But they found who killed her. So as of now, Deirdre is considered to be the last victim.
I'd be curious about the escalation and how many did you say? I know you
in the Vanishing Triangle.
Yeah,
eight.
So eight total
from 93 to 98.
Although the first one in 93, maybe or maybe not be.
No. 93. They do believe it was. It was like another one in the middle in 95.
Okay.
Who they think may not be. There are actually a couple who they think might not have been related,
sure,
but they were in the middle.
Okay.
So they do think several of them are connected, including the first, the last, and a few in the middle.
Okay. So you're talking about a span of 5 years
yeah
there. And then
Larry Murphy would have been like in his 30s.
Right. And then the last attempt was 2000, 2001. The one where he got caught.
Yeah, 2000.
2000.
Yeah.
I mean, it's certainly possible.
Yeah.
You know, serial rapists, serial killers, we've seen historically, will commit, you know, these acts either in spurts or the longer they go with getting away with it. And if unless there's a significant change in their life, it just mm-hmm. progresses to more and more violence or more and more victims. So it's certainly plausible.
Well, it is interesting
that he would be in that area.
Yeah, and he was. And it is interesting that you bring up a change in their life, because at the time of the 2000 crime mm-hmm. for which he was arrested, Larry Murphy was married and his wife was pregnant. Mm. And initially, she supported him. Because she was like, well, this is insane. My husband never would have done something like this.
Right.
But after his arrest and, you know, when they're getting ready, when they're going through the whole process, he basically realized that they had him dead to rights. And so he ended up pleading guilty, mm. at which point his wife was like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, I'm out. And apparently, to my knowledge, Larry has never met his child.
Do we know how long they were married?
I don't.
At that point.
I don't know anything else about it. Just okay. that he was married and she was pregnant at the time and then left him once he was convicted.
Sure. Sure. I'm just wondering if the marriage was closer to 98.
Yeah.
Which is what stopped his progression, at least momentarily.
Mm-hmm.
And then perhaps the physical or the stressors of having a child on the way kind of pushed him back into what he was known for.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know either.
Yeah, but that's interesting. Yeah. So his name appeared in relation to both Deirdre and JoJo Dullard's case shortly after his release in 2010. I found an article that was published right after that. And apparently the spot where he first attacked his victim, who he later took to the Wicklow Mountains, the one in 2000, was very near the area where JoJo was last seen. Murphy was also working as a carpenter in Deirdre's area at the time of her disappearance. But not only that, it's alleged that he also did some work at her grandmother's shop.
Oh, so perhaps he followed her from the grandma's shop.
Maybe. His name and number were found among her things after her death, the grandmother's.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like when he was there, it might have been a couple of years before Deirdre's disappearance. So mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, there are conflicting things about where he was.
Specifically and when, at the time.
Exactly.
Yeah. But,
it's
still evidence that links him.
Exactly. And exactly.
Like I said, I don't believe in coincidences.
Except when you do.
Except for when I do.
So this was 2010 when he was released.
Mm-hmm.
The next year, in 2011, an ex-cellmate of Murphy's told police that Murphy had confessed to him.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. He told Detective Alan Bailey, now retired, who was the detective on Deirdre's case at the time, that while he and Murphy were drinking hooch and doing drugs inside the prison, that Murphy told him that, quote, he had pulled in alongside a young girl on the road just outside of Newbridge, waved the map in her direction, and asked for instructions on getting to a particular place. When the youngster leaned in through the open passenger window to try to see where he was pointing to, he is alleged to have grabbed her by her hair and roughly dragged her down into the car, forcing her down into the well of the front passenger seat. End quote. Murphy then sped off. And it should be noted at this time that Deirdre was small. She was only about 5'2" and I was apparently of slim build.
Okay.
So physically, like, that sounds extremely possible.
Yeah. I'm curious what the cellmate is getting out of this.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You know,
yeah.
I get that they were drinking hooch or whatever
yeah.
and doing drugs, but like what sense would it make for him to confess to more than what he's already pled guilty to, you know, even to somebody in prison?
Right. Like, no, you're right. And I never like these like jailhouse snitches, regardless of how plausible the story might sound on the surface. And to their credit, police took this, but they didn't like go, okay, let's go get them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they're like, yeah, we can't rest a case
on that. Yeah.
Right.
Right.
But what this information did lead to were searches in County Wicklow.
Yeah.
You know, where Murphy lived at the time. But police didn't turn anything up. So after police didn't turn anything up from the search, they actually didn't make this confession public for another 7 years. Detectives who by 2018 had already interviewed 2,000 people in relation to Deirdre's case began to re-interview builders and tradesmen who may have encountered Murphy in the summer of 1998. Because again, he was working as a contractor.
Yeah, no, that's smart.
Yeah. This case actually went through an entire like 12-month cold case review mm-hmm. around this time where they just, again, started from the beginning and looked at everything that they had. And one of the things that they did during this time was they took that CCTV footage, which is already good, and enhanced it mm-hmm. And kind of cleaned it up a little bit so that, and you know, they didn't see anything. They're like, oh, wait, there she is. Being abducted. It wasn't anything like that. But what they were able to do was identify more people from the video.
Right. Yeah.
Who were around Deirdre mm-hmm. and then interview or re-interview them.
Right.
So they were doing that. And Gardai continued to work methodically to build a case against Larry Murphy. Like, yes, they learned about this alleged confession in 2011, but you know, like I said, that's not enough to arrest, much less convict anybody of anything, really.
Right.
So they trudged along while Larry Murphy continued to live as a free man.
Yeah, and I'm sure that they were watching him.
I'm really glad that you brought that up because this will lead us into the little side path that I wanted to take.
Okay.
That it's something I know you will find very interesting. Because as we've mentioned on here before, I think your father worked in state parole mm-hmm. and you grew up with stories from him about men like Larry Murphy, mm. who he had to deal with.
Yes.
So you will love this article that I found from the Herald that was written shortly after his release from prison in 2010.
Okay.
Okay. But I want to preface this. Because it took me several paragraphs to get to this. So I just want to like move it up and not bury the lead, which is Murphy was being watched, like you just said. So the article said that he was, quote, being monitored by the Garda's National Surveillance Unit with plainclothes officers following him. He carries a mobile phone and reports to Garda daily, end quote. All right. But like I said, that was buried like way down in this article. And this is how the article started. And I'm just going to read the first several paragraphs. And again, the whole thing is linked on our blog because this is absolutely mind-boggling coming from an American perspective in general. And especially from your perspective as somebody who like grew up with a state parole officer in your house. Quote, rapist Larry Murphy is in secure accommodation today after finally agreeing to consider undertaking counseling. His involvement with the probation service will be voluntary and comes about as a result of the widespread hostile reaction he encountered since being turned loose from prison on Thursday last. Although he snubbed all previous offers of treatment, he came to realize that he needed help from probation officers in getting accommodation. In return, he agreed to voluntarily keep in touch with them and consider using other support services, such as counseling. There would be nothing to prevent him from opting out of contact with the probation service at a later date. End quote.
What is the point of a probation officer over there if everything has to be voluntary?
I don't know. It's like help him find a place to live, apparently.
I'm so confused by that.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah, I mean, here stateside, like, you don't have a choice.
Yeah, that's the conditions of your release.
Yes, that's part of your sentence.
Yeah.
The terminology and the about things varies per state as far as probation, parole and what that means or whatever. But, like, so the way Pennsylvania is set up is that, let's say you get 5 to 10, mm-hmm. right? So you really serve the entire 10 years. You serve the first 5 in jail, and then you're eligible for parole, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say you are paroled. Well, you have to serve the rest of your 5 years, the rest of your 10 years. The next 5 years, you're on parole.
So you're still serving your sentence. You're just doing it outside of prison.
Correct. And you have limited civil rights.
Right.
There is no Fourth Amendment in your world if you are this person. You know, your parole agent can come and search your house, where you work, your car at any time.
Right.
With no reason whatsoever.
Yeah, they don't need probable cause.
No, nothing. Yeah. They don't even need reasonable suspicion.
Yeah.
It's just, hey, it's a Tuesday. I come and toss your house every Tuesday because you pissed me off. Whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, and there are other factors that go into that. Like, they can't be used as an agent of the state to find something else to charge them with. Mm-hmm. Like the parole agent has to be searching their house for, let's say if it was a drug conviction, for drugs.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Regardless, like, you know, you still spend all that time serving your sentence, just in a different capacity. I don't understand why there would even be probation officers if it would be voluntary.
Yeah, I don't know. I find it interesting, and I don't really want to comment one way or the other, just because we know nothing about the Irish judicial system.
You're right.
And so we'll just like sound like dumb Americans or whatever. And they're like, no, actually, this is genius and whatever. Well, yeah, I'm sure we do. And also, like, America's incarceration rates are fucking stupid. Yeah. And I mean, listen, we obviously cannot
be.
Who
are we to judge?
Exactly. Yes. Because, like, we live in the worst country in the world when it comes to shit like this.
Incarceration rates, especially, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, whatever. But I just did find that interesting, and I knew you would, like, yeah. get a kick out of that. Well, and another reason to maybe not, like, turn our nose up at this is that, as far as I know, Murphy has stayed out of trouble since his release.
As far as we know, yeah.
Well, exactly. Sure. So, like, he's never been caught for anything else. He's never gone back to jail. He's never, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, and that was over a decade ago. He is also believed to be currently living in London. Since his name was officially given as the chief suspect in 2018, Gardai have inched closer and closer to making an arrest. In 2020, the case was turned over to the director of public prosecutions, who are gathering everything they needed to make that arrest. While the DPP said that they believed Murphy to be in London, witnesses reported that they saw him in Ireland at a Garda COVID checkpoint. The Irish Times reported that Murphy had female clothing, a mattress, and pillows in the back of his van. He is apparently homeless and living back in Ireland, at least about a year ago in 2020.
So maybe they're not watching him quite so closely anymore?
Yeah, that's kind of what it sounds like. Mm. But again, that all of that is kind of unconfirmed. In February of 2021, the DPP confirmed that they were still working on the case, with a high-ranking official telling The Independent, quote, "We haven't forgotten about Larry Murphy. The DPP has been considering a case against our chief suspect for exactly 1 year. No news is good news. The longer the Garda evidence is considered, the better a signal this is for investigators, as all aspects of the case are being fully considered." End quote. So, I mean, they're really taking their time and like crossing all their T's and dotting all their I's on this one.
Yeah. Sounds like it.
And right now in 2021, that's where we still are, on the precipice of an arrest. The last article that I found on this was just from a few weeks ago on August 9th in the Sunday World, and it was revealed that the DPP has sent the file to a specialty barrister for a second opinion to ensure that they have enough evidence to prosecute. And the article said that charges could come within weeks. So like literally at this point, any minute. Murphy is also a suspect in the disappearance of JoJo Dullard, who I mentioned earlier. Her case was also upgraded to a murder investigation in October of last year. Murphy is also suspected in the disappearance of another Vanishing Triangle case, that of Annie McCarrick, the first woman to disappear. She was a 27-year-old who had moved from Long Island, New York, to Dublin in 1987. In 1993, she decided to take a day trip to the Wicklow Mountains. She never made it back home. We will keep you updated on any new developments, but let's hope that 2021 is going to be the year that Deirdre sees justice and that this opens the door for families to finally have answers about what happened to their loved ones in the Vanishing Triangle. Deirdre Jacob has been missing since July 28, 1998. She was 5'2" and was wearing a blue t-shirt with white shoes and was carrying a black bag with a yellow Caterpillar Inc. logo at the time of her disappearance. Deirdre was 18 years old when she disappeared. She would be 41 today. If you have any information on Deirdre Jacob's disappearance, please contact the Newbridge Guard Eye at 353-454-3212. You can see all of the sources for this episode, along with photos and videos, at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook, and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we are actually going to be out of town next week, so we are unfortunately going to have to take another break, so we will not have a new episode next week, but we will see you here the week after that for a brand new episode.
See you then.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains May 2nd through the 12th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
This podcast is supported by Talkspace.
When my husband came home from his military deployment, readjusting was hard for all of us. Thankfully, I found Talkspace.
Talkspace provides professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatric providers online.
Military members, veterans, and their dependents ages 13 and older can get fast access to providers, all from the privacy of their computers or smartphones.
I just answered a few questions online, and Talkspace matched me with a therapist. We meet when it's convenient for me, and I can message her anytime. It was so easy to set up, and they accept TRICARE. Therapy was going so well, my husband and I started seeing a couples therapist through Talkspace, too.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, including TRICARE. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com/military. Go to Talkspace.com/military to get started today. That's Talkspace.com/military.